the college football season is well in full swing. It's been a successful season overall for a lot of coaches, especially when it comes to their salaries.
USA Today has been tracking how much universities pay their football coaches over the last 10 years. And in that time, the pay has doubled, with the average compensation coming in at just at over $2 million a year.
Wisconsin's head coach is right in that mix, too. And with many college football coaches out earning professors and administrators, some are starting to ask, is it all worth it?
For more on coaches' salaries and the growth of college football, we're joined by Gilbert Gall. He's a two-time Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and the author of Billion Dollar Ball, A Journey Through the Big Money Culture of College Football. Gilbert, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me on the show.
Well, what do college football coaches make today at places like UW-Madison?
Well, at Madison, it's I think the current coach is getting about $2.1 million. I may be off $100,000 here or there on that figure because the prior coach left and it went down a little bit. But at the large schools, the 65 or so schools in the so-called five power conferences, it ranges from $7.1 million for Nick Saban down at Alabama to, as you mentioned a moment ago, about an average of $2 million. There's now about 10 coaches earning an average of about $5 million a year.
Well, give us a sense how much that's changed in recent years.
Well, it's changed dramatically, and the change dovetails the monetization of college football over the last decade and a half. When I began research on my book, Billion Dollar Ball, I noticed that there had been an extraordinary run-up in the scale of college football, and by scale I mean the finances. So what happened basically beginning in the mid-'80s was the athletic directors figured out that there was such a demand for college football that they could charge extraordinary sums to fans to secure a seat at their stadium for tickets, and then they negotiated incredibly lucrative television fee deals, including in the Big Ten through the Big Ten Network. And finally, there was just an abundance of corporate money. So they figured out how to make an extraordinary amount of money, and as they did, the coaches, not surprisingly, began to say, you know what, we want a larger slice of the pie.
So this is college football we're talking about. It's not the professional league. So what is the justification for paying coaches so much money?
Well, you know, it depends who you speak with. There really is no plausible explanation if you believe that college sports are still part of an educational experience and not a commercial business. The reality, of course, is they are a commercial business when we talk about college football and men's basketball, possibly a few teams involving women's basketball. But all the other sports, the Olympic sports, women's running, the rest of them, they don't make any revenue. So the justification ultimately boils down to the fact that these coaches are responsible for putting an awful lot of people in the stands week after week and generating, basically, at a school like Wisconsin, probably in the neighborhood of somewhere between 50 and 75% of all the revenue that comes into the athletic department. So it's a business justification, which has nothing really to do with the education.
Now, Barry Alvarez, a UW-Madison football coaching legend, has weighed in on this, and he says this is just what the market demands. What is the argument about the market?
Well, it's basically what I just said. I mean, the argument is that the coaches and their agents, they all have big-time agents now, just as professional coaches do, are responsible for all this money, and that there's a limited supply of coaches who are capable of producing winning teams year after year after year and filling the stadium and attracting all of this money. So that basically is the argument for why they need to be paid this much. Now, that conveniently avoids all kinds of really important contextual questions, such as, well, wait a second, you're not paying any taxes on this money, on none of this money that's coming in. You're not paying a cent in taxes. And that's all because of the idea that college football is still somehow covered by the umbrella of tax exemption, that it's part of the charitable enterprise that a college university is supposed to be. Now, there's such a fundamental contradiction there that it's almost preposterous, but the schools still continue to work both sides of the street, claiming that, you know, well, we're really nonprofits, we're really charities, and at the same time operating, at least in the terms of college football, as a commercial enterprise.
We're talking to author and journalist Gilbert Gahl, talking about the growth of college football coach salaries and where they're going from here. Now, Wisconsin's Chancellor Rebecca Blank has said that she'd like to create a salary cap for college football coaches. I don't know. Is there any chance that that could happen? Where is that?
Good luck with that happening. No, there's no chance of that happening anytime soon. The business model of college football is so big and so powerful at this point in time that I really don't see anything threatening it in the near term. And when I say near term, I'm saying really about 5 years, possibly as long as 10 years. At that point, things begin to become problematic for the model. There's a series of forces at play that will eventually play out, and they involve paying players. They involve the tax status. They involve technological disruption, threats to the business model. And I also throw in there that I think the younger students are a little less avid in their support of college football compared with, say people my age. I'm 64, grandparents and the students' parents. They just don't have the loyalty because they're a little more distracted by all these things in their hands.
So what are the issues at stake there? You mentioned what the college athletes, the football players themselves make, and they don't make on par with, it sounds like, what the coaches make. They don't make anything. So what does this mean for what this argument is going in the future?
So it depends how you think about all this. If you believe that it's really a business model, sort of the minor leagues for the NFL, and they're generating all this money, and it's the players responsible for it, well, then you sort of side with the idea, well, let's pay these players, money to play college football. And I'm talking about more than a couple thousand dollars for the so-called cost of attendance. I'm talking about, possibly tens of thousands of dollars, if not even more, if you get to a model where you're bidding for five-star high school players. That's one argument. If you believe that what's occurred in college football, as I do, is a distortion of the mission of these large universities, even a perversion of their mission, then you're a little less sympathetic to the notion of turning the college football team into a minor league for the NFL, and hence you're a little more suspect about the idea of paying players tens of thousands of dollars. It completely disrupts and challenges the mission of the universities if you do that.
In terms of critics who might look at these salaries and say, this is way too much, this is college football, what is the case to be made that, on the other hand, the revenue coming in does a lot to float the university as a whole and the education of all the students who go there?
Wait a second. The amount of money that is transferred from athletic departments to academics is de minimis. I mean, it's a very small percentage of the money that comes in. What I found is that when you analyze the finances of the athletic departments, I mean, clearly the money stays in the athletic departments. Now, in a positive sense, you can argue that, okay, but that money, football, is underwriting sports like women's rowing at Wisconsin, which, I spent several days with Bebe Bryans and her team there and was just absolutely blown away by the coach and by the rowers and by the fact that this is still truly the old model of college athletics, kind of the old amateur approach to athletics. So you could argue that football is paying for women's rowing at Wisconsin. And the flip side of that, of course, is that without women's rowing and those big numbers to offset the football numbers, I'm talking about Title IX, college football would be in big trouble at Wisconsin and the rest of the schools in the Big Ten and the other conferences. So those are sort of the arguments.
Well, then you've also got a situation at the UW system where there's big budget cuts coming down the pike, and the university has asked for more returns from the football program. So in that sense, there is some payback there. Is that the sort of thing you think that should factor into the equation of what coaches are made?
Yeah. I don't know if it is or it isn't, but I want to see that play out. I want to see where you get to a point where college football is actually contributing real money to academics, as opposed to plowing the money back into these gigantic salaries, the salaries of the 9 full-time assistant coaches, the back office operations, and the rest of it. I had actually had an interesting conversation with my wife where we said, well, how much would be enough for college football to kind of justify what it's doing? And I came down to the argument that, well, it ought to be at least 25% of the money that they're bringing in. You know, that would be a real contribution. And with all of this additional television money coming in through things like the Big Ten Network and the SEC Network and the Pac-12 Network, I would argue that the presidents, if they had any guts, they would say to their athletic directors, you know what, at least 50% of that money needs to go to academics if we're going to continue to pose and pretend that things like college football are truly part of the educational mission of the university and not a pure commercial enterprise, which I think it is today for these really rich schools.
So you floated that 25% figure conversation with your wife. Is anyone else saying that? Is that something that you could
say? No. We were just having an interesting conversation about it. I can't remember the context of how it came up, but it did. No, nobody else is floating that. There are a few people who you know, I think fairly, you know, probably agree with the general argument that I'm making about this in terms of, you know, why not more money going to academics. But, you know, it's really sort of shocking how silent the presidents are about this. On the one hand, they put out reports year after year claiming that, you know, this is all out of control, the spending's out of control, and then they throw up their hands and say, but we're powerless to do anything about it. Somebody help us, please. Well, who's going to help them? The NCAA's not going to help them. I mean, they're in bed on all of this. Congress isn't going to help them because Congress clearly has protected the tax status, the privileged tax status of college football for at least three or four decades.
And we leave it there. So, Gilbert, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, you're welcome.
That was Gilbert Gull talking about the growth of college football coach salaries and where they're going.